Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, in the spirit of Christmas, I always enjoy reading this from the New York Sun back in 1897, entitled Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus by Francis B. Church. Virginia writes, Dear editor, I'm 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there is no Santa Claus. Papa says if you see it in the sun, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Signed, Virginia O'Hanlon. And the New York Sun responds, Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man's is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist. And you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus? It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world, Virginia, are those that neither children nor men can see. No Santa Claus? Thank God, Virginia, he lives, and he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, Santa Claus will continue to make glad the heart of childhood. From the New York Sun, September 21st, 1897. Always something I enjoy reading around the holidays, something we should share because I heard a good quote the other day. Christmas is not just a day of the year. It's a frame of mind. So hopefully we're all in that frame of mind of the Christmas spirit.
One.
And let's enjoy one of the classics. Frank Sinatra sings Mel's Torme's Christmas song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe can help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh, and every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
They know that Santa's on his way, with toys and goodies on his sleigh, and every mother's child is gonna spy to see.
And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas.
Frank Sinatra, The Christmas Song, and we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. The Joffrey Ballet, led by Artistic Director Ashley Weider and Executive Director Greg Cameron, proudly present the highly anticipated world premiere production of The Nutcracker by Christopher Wheeldon, winner of the 2015 Tony Award for Best Choreography for the Broadway hit An American in Paris. The Nutcracker will be presented at the Joffrey's home venue, the historic Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University in downtown Chicago at 50 East Congress Parkway, December 10th through the 30th. Wheeldon reimagines the beloved holiday classic, The Nutcracker, for a new generation, replacing the traditional 19th century setting with Chicago's 1893 World's Fair. Wheeldon's stunning choreography and the artistic team's visionary design will celebrate a turn-of-the-century Chicago as seen through the eyes of a child. Set to Tchaikovsky's classic score, the Chicago Philharmonic, conducted by Scott Speck, music director of the Joffrey Ballet, will delight audiences with live music at every performance. The Nutcracker has remained very close to my heart ever since I danced in the world premiere of Joffrey's production in 1987, said artistic director Ashley Weider. I have danced in many Nutcrackers through the years and understand the power of a good story well told. We tell stories in a different way today. Dancers' training and skills are a hybrid of classical technique and contemporary athletic movement. We benefit from innovative theater technologies. We live in a diverse and rapidly changing world. Our storytelling must recognize these changes. I can think of no better person than Christopher Wheeldon to create our new Nutcracker. I have worked with Christopher for many years and discussed this Nutcracker for nearly a decade. Great art takes time. Christopher has assembled a magnificent artistic team, and together they are inventing a magical world amongst the grand concourses of the White City. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, world-renowned dancer, having performed with the legendary Rudolf Nureyev and Margot Fonteyn, teacher, mentor, member of the Royal Ballet, former ballet master of the San Francisco Ballet, visionary in the world of dance, and the artistic director of the world-famous Joffrey Ballet, now presenting the world premiere of Christopher Wheeldon's The Nutcracker at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress at Michigan, December 10th through the 30th, my good friend, Mr. Ashley Weider. Ashley, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Well, we've been waiting for this, my friend.
Yeah, for sure. That's really true. It's an incredibly exciting week, I have to say.
For all of us, for all of Chicago. Yeah. For those who think that you came up with this idea a couple weeks ago, not so.
Not so indeed. It actually goes back to 2007.
Really?
When I had been appointed the director of the Joffrey, and I was still at San Francisco Ballet, but I was also working with Christopher Walden in New York. And so on a lunch break, we went out and we were talking, and, you know, just like I didn't know what my dreams were going to be for the Joffrey. And, you know, Chris just put it out there and said, you know, I've never done a Nutcracker, and I'd love to do one, and I'd love to work with you on one. And I just, you know, I'm such a huge fan of his work for so many reasons.
Sure, sure.
And I just said, you know, Chris, I have no idea when it might happen, but I said, I really want to hold you to that. And so here we are 9 years later, and, yeah, it's going to happen.
You know, allow me a little history here, if I could.
Yes.
1816, Hoffman writes The Nutcracker and the Mouse King, and it's kind of tweaked and revised by Alexander Dumas, who wrote The Three Musketeers. In 1890, Tchaikovsky begins his ballet, and it's first presented 2 years later at the Mariinsky Theater by the Kirov in St. Petersburg. In 1944, the first time it comes to the United States, it comes to San Francisco. Then George Balanchine, in 1954, brings it to America, and that's the Nutcracker, which we're all familiar with. It's then presented at the University of Iowa by Mr. Joffrey and Gerald Arpino. And from that point on, for all these years, we are enjoying the Nutcracker as we know it. And here in 2016, I think I say this because this is very exciting. This is historical what we're doing here today, I think, and talking about a new reimagined Nutcracker that will live in for years to come.
Absolutely. And you know, Kevin, I think that the thing that when I moved to Chicago, you know, there, I mean, Chicago is truly for me like the great American city. And it is so rich in its history. And so when you start to like uncover that history and you realize that there were so many great things that happened here, there were also great tragedies here too. But I think that, you know, after the Great Fire and then the idea of hosting the World's Fair, mm-hmm. and the success of that fair and what it brought to architecture, to the rest of America, to the electricity, you know, the Ferris wheel, Wrigley chewing gum.
Sure.
There were so many things that came out of it.
Sure.
But I just thought that it was a really one way, a wonderful way to kind of rethink what is the story of an immigrant child who has that opportunity to experience what the World's Fair had to offer. Because it's more than just a fantasy land. It's an education, and it's a really beautiful journey. And so, you know, Chris and I talked a lot about it, and then Chris did a huge amount of research about the World's Fair. And what he's done in his storytelling with Brian Selznick, the children's author who wrote the narrative for this Nutcracker, is incredibly touching. It's really, really beautiful. And it's not about a child that has everything she could ever ask for and then has a huge Christmas party that she gets even more,
mm-hmm.
and then she has a dream and she gets even more. It's about, like, everyday working-class people that have an opportunity to celebrate together and to enjoy what that wealth of humanity is for us.
And these are her dreams. This is this young girl's dreams. You know, the sense of timelessness or the themes of timelessness in the Nutcracker itself, the human story about a little girl who dreams about a different kind of future. And this is a different kind of future that we experienced in 1893 when this exposition came to Chicago, just as you said, after the fire of 1871. It's Tchaikovsky's music and with, you know, his great ballets of Swan Lake and Sleeping Beauty. And this is one of his greatest productions. And finally, the dancing and all this together brings that story to everyone who all of us who have seen or been familiarized with the historic way that Joffrey and Balanchine put their ballet together. But there's going to be new people who are going to see this for the first time. This is going to be their point of reference, you know?
Absolutely. And the thing about Christopher's choreography is that he understands absolutely the classical language of ballet. But he has his own way of using that language and how he wants to tell a story and write a pas de deux or a variation. And I think that for the company, it has been such an amazing process working with him and having that opportunity to have him create on them, because that is always, like, when a choreographer walks into a studio, there's already a dialogue with the people that are in the room. And I think that for the company, for the Joffrey Ballet, who have, you know, not had so many new works created on them, especially something as massive as the Nutcracker, mm-hmm. it has been such a family. And I think that, you know, Christopher said to the company, he said, you know, the thing about the Joffrey Ballet is that it really is a unique company in that we are a family. And like families, we have our really our best moments, and occasionally we have our bad moments.
Sure.
But we are a family. And he said there isn't another company that has the same feeling that the Joffrey Ballet has, as the, in that it is incredibly inclusive of everybody.
And that's very evident, this way we see when the productions you put on. But there's an old saying too, Ashley, a leader without someone to follow is just another guy taking a walk. And you're a great leader. And those people, those young people, look up to you because not only are you there to lead them, you've experienced what they're experiencing. And you've had those same times and moments on the stage. And for you, you can look back and say, well, yeah, I remember that. And they can look to you and say, well, I aspire to perhaps reach the level that he has in years to come.
Yeah, no, I hope so. And the thing is that, you know, with anything that we do at the Joffrey, I'm in the studio with them all day, and I teach the company, you know, 3-4 times a week. And I think that being with them all the time and kind of nurturing them and pushing them and being, you know, their supporter is really, really vital. And I think that, you know, when Chris and his team, which is an amazing team, which we can talk about, but when they leave, the responsibility is with me and my incredible ballet staff. And so we have to maintain every single performance as if it was the first time, because for every performance, there is a new person that has never been to the theater that we want them to experience absolutely the best possible thing.
Now, just give us a little overview. We have... No, we don't have Claire. We have Marie now, a little Polish girl, correct?
Yeah. So it's a mother and her daughter Marie mm-hmm. and her naughty brother Frank.
Good. Okay.
And she is a single parent, and they host a gathering of all the workers who are working at the World's Fair, mm-hmm. and the great empresario of the fair arrives and. You know, he is that kind of Drosselmeyer magical figure.
Okay.
And it's just, you know, how they use their time together and how what he does with kind of giving the kids kind of old bric-a-brac toys mm-hmm. is really magical. There's just a lot of magic in it. And I think that, you know, from the party scene into her dream, the transition is so incredible because it's so massive and it's so different mm-hmm. That I think that the team, you know, so Brian Selznick, Julian Crouch, who is the scenic and costume designer, Basil Twist, who's the great puppeteer, Natasha Katz, who is a brilliant lighting designer, and then Ben Piercy have all collectively like brought an incredible magic to the show. And it's a massive show. It's like a big, big Broadway show.
Let me ask a couple of questions about what we still have and what we won't have. Will we still have the Christmas tree, of course?
The Christmas tree is phenomenal.
Okay, beautiful. Okay, that's good. Now, how about will we have the mice?
We have incredible mice.
Okay, great.
I have to say that, you know, Basil Twist has been in charge of the mice, and he's done such an amazing job. I mean, they're quite incredible, I have to say.
Now, Basil Twist, of course, is an Obie and Drama Desk Award-winning puppeteer and did the Addams Family.
Yes.
Right, okay. And we don't have Jocelyn, but we have the magical, the person who runs the fair.
The sorry of the fair.
Okay, good.
So and he takes Marie on this incredible journey.
Okay.
And we have the Land of the Snow,
okay.
which is kind of right on Lake Michigan.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
And the scenes are just spectacularly beautiful. And then we take a wonderful boat journey to the World's Fair across the lake. Mm-hmm. And they arrive at the World's Fair, and they're greeted by the golden statue.
Mm-hmm. And will we have the divertissements from Spain
we
and
do.
China?
So, okay. And so we go through the different pavilions
of
the different countries.
Right.
So it's and you know, Christopher has like choreographically the production is so dense and so rich with his choreography and his ideas. And you know, I think the experience that Chris has had in terms of, you know, he created The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland, A Winter's Tale, An American in Paris. As a choreographer, but also as a director, he is absolutely brilliant. And he's consumed by the project, and he has copious notes every single day for everyone, for all of us, for the dancers, the tech. And so it's just been really it's been, for me personally, to work with Christopher again at such close quarters has been a really special year for me. This is the best gift I think I could ever want.
And, of course, Christopher, now most famous, most recently, for An American in Paris, a great success on Broadway.
Yes, absolutely. Right. And now it's touring America. Right. So it will come to Chicago, and then it also opens in London. So. Mm-hmm. He has a lot going on across the world as we speak. They just opened his Adventures of Alice in Copenhagen. It also premiered in Sweden. So there's just things happening for him every single week.
Now, when you have a production like this, Ashley, as you just mentioned, as you're going along, it's still a work in progress to an extent. Aren't you tweaking it here and there? You might want to change something, see something here that you might want to adjust.
Every day.
Every day, yeah.
And, you know, Kevin, there's one thing that – so we have this amazing relationship with the University of Iowa and Hunter Auditorium. And they came in – when they knew that we were doing a new Nutcracker, they wanted to be part of that, and they wanted to be a sponsor. They had originally – sponsored and paid for Robert Joffrey's production in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave us an amazing gift, and they gave us also 3 weeks of tech time mm-hmm. in their new theater in Iowa City. So we were able to go there with the entire company and all the team and do 5 preview performances. And every day after a performance, we would sit up and we'd go through the whole ballet all over again and write copious notes for the lighting, the projections, the scenic designs, for the company. And so it is definitely a work in progress until, I guess, until Saturday night, which is when we open.
And I think it's only appropriate that you go back to the University of Iowa, because that's where Mr. Joffrey started. So why wouldn't you stand on those shoulders that you started out a long time ago?
Yeah, it's a very special relationship, and I think that, you know, as part of, like, the Joffrey's history is that it has had such a presence in the Midwest. And then, of course, you know, in 95 when the company moved to Chicago, and Chicago has really, really embraced the company. And I've always said to all the people that have been behind the company, you know, if it wasn't for the good people of Chicago, I'm not sure the Joffrey would have survived. Because, you know, arts organizations are very, very fragile. And definitely the Joffrey Ballet found its home in Chicago.
But I think it's also because of the great presentations that you've put together. You've invested a lot of time and effort and emotion in what you do, Ashley, in bringing people together to watch this great art form. And I think it's regenerated a ballet not only in Chicago but nationwide. Because of that, I think the Joffrey is as strong, I'm sure you'll agree, strong as ever, and people are more interested in ballet than they ever been.
No, I think you're right. It's a really fruitful time for us. And for the company, you know, we opened our season with Romeo and Juliet that was just so successful. And now we have this new Nutcracker. We have an amazing winter program in February and then another new program in April. And in between that, we also have a week of performances at Lincoln Center in New York. So there is a lot of really great energy for the company and for what we're trying to do. And I think that when you look at an art form like anything, like a sport, when you see a really great team playing a great game, everybody understands that excellence. And so that's what we're striving for here.
Well, it's going to be an exciting time, and I'm certainly looking forward to it, as is Kimberly. And And well, Chicagoland is looking forward to this, and the people that are going to be able to come out, and for those who are familiar with the Nutcracker the way it was, we'll be able to see a reimagined version. For those who have never seen the Nutcracker, we're going to be fascinated because it's a dream come true when you come see the Nutcracker, and it's something that everybody should experience, especially young people. This is a great way to introduce young people to ballet. Ashley, and I think this is – I say this, and parents and grandparents should have this responsibility, and teachers, bring the children. Explain to them what they're going to see, so when they come, all they have to do is sit and watch the magic of what's on stage.
Absolutely. And I think that this – I think that, you know, Christopher wanted to make the Nutcracker absolutely accessible to everybody, you know, to boys and girls and grandpas and grandmas and, you know, everyone, parents. And so there is so much in it for every single person, at every age group. And interesting little story here is that the children that were originally in Robert Joffrey's Nutcracker in 1987 had a reunion last Saturday in Iowa City.
Really?
And now they're in their 40s. And they, you know, they came to the performance and they brought their children. And they said, you know, actually, we didn't know what we would think. But the letters that I have received, they were so blown away mm-hmm. by the production. Yeah. And they just said, it is truly the most stunning production of the Nutcracker they've seen. And it has all of the joys that they wanted in the Nutcracker and more.
And the Christmas tree.
And the Christmas tree.
Evidently, you can leave the Nutcracker, but the Nutcracker may never leave you. The ballet's rhythms and a host of associated memories don't disappear. They just get filed away in part of the brain, released in flashbacks filled with sometimes early memories and emotions. And, of course, there's the whole Christmas thing. The Nutcracker serves up an idealized Christmas on a platter full of treats that everyone has been promised at one time or another, by your parents or by books and movies and TV specials. Christmas can be a joyful and problematic holiday for nearly everyone. It's not religious enough for some. It's too religious for others. It's lonely for those without family, and it's too full of relatives for those who have had enough of being known by a childhood nickname. There's pressure to spend money, to commune, to be festive, and the holidays can become a time of heightened expectations and recurring disappointments. The Nutcracker, however, is simpler. Like Christmas, it always comes around in December, but no one expects quite so much from a ballet, so its gifts can be discovered in a more relaxed manner. It provides for all of us a small oasis of beauty, inspiration, and togetherness for the Christmas season. The Joffrey Ballet, led by Artistic Director Ashley Weider and Executive Director Greg Cameron, proudly present the highly anticipated world premiere production of The Nutcracker by Christopher Wheeldon, winner of the 2015 Tony Award for Best Choreography for the Broadway hit An American in Paris. The Nutcracker will be presented at the Joffrey's home venue, the historic Auditorium Theater, Roosevelt University, in downtown Chicago at 50 East Congress Parkway, in 27 performances December 10th through the 30th. And on the line with us right now is the very excited artistic director of the Joffrey Ballet, Ashley Weider. Ashley, always a pleasure. And you know how much fun I have talking about the Nutcracker.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Kevin. And it's it has just been a really magical journey. So I think all of us here at the Joffrey are just thrilled to share this with the people of Chicago. A really stunning production for this great, great city.
Thank you for this great Christmas present. We won't be able to be there for opening night, but we'll be there next week, and I'll be in touch. And certainly, Merry Christmas to you and to everybody at the Joffrey, and thank them for sharing their unique talents with all of us.
It's a pleasure, Kevin. And to all your listeners, you know, the happiest of holidays, and may we have a peaceful new year.
You're here. Thank you, my dear friend.
Okay, thanks so much, Kevin.
Thanks, Ashley.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ashley Weider, the artistic director of the Joffrey Ballet. Always a pleasure to chat with him, but especially to talk about the Nutcracker, a favorite of mine. And as I said a little bit in our closing, it provides for all of us a small oasis of beauty, inspiration, and togetherness for the Christmas season. So for the little ones, bring them to see the Nutcracker. And for those who have seen it and will see it again in the reimagined version put together by both Ashley and Christopher Wheeldon, it'll be very exciting. For information, call the Auditorium Theater, 50 East Congress at Michigan, again, December 10th through the 30th. A little story I always enjoy reading, and hopefully I can get through it without getting choking up like I usually do. It's entitled Coincidence, I Think Not. I was driving home from a meeting this evening about 5, stuck in traffic on Colorado Boulevard, and the car started to choke and splutter and die. I barely managed to coast into a gas station, glad only that I would not be blocking traffic and would have a somewhat warm spot to wait for the tow truck. It wouldn't even turn over. Before I could make the call, I saw a woman walking out of the Quickie Mart building, and it looked like she slipped on some ice and fell into a gas pump, so I got out to see if she was okay. When I got there, it looked more like she had been overcome by sobs than that she had fallen. She was a young woman who looked really haggard with dark circles under her eyes. She dropped something as I helped her up, and I picked it up to give it to her. It was a nickel. At that moment, everything came into focus for me. The crying woman, the ancient Suburban crammed full of stuff with 3 kids in the back, one in a car seat, and the gas pump reading $14.95. I asked her if she was okay and if she needed help, and she just kept saying, "I don't want my kids to see me crying." So we stood on the other side of the pump from her car. She said she was driving to California and that things were very hard for her right now. So I asked, "And you were praying?" That made her back away from me a little, but assured her I was not a crazy person and said, "He heard you, and he sent me." I took out my card and swiped it through the card reader on the pump so she could fill her up completely, and while it was fueling, walked next to the McDonald's and bought 2 big bags of food, some gift certificates for more, and a big cup of coffee. She gave the food to the kids in the car who attacked it like wolves, and we stood by the pump eating fries and talking a little. She told me her name and said she lived in Kansas City. Her boyfriend left 2 months ago, and she had not been able to make ends meet. She knew she wouldn't have money to pay rent January 1st, and finally, in desperation, had finally called her parents, with whom she had not spoken for about 5 years. They lived in California and said she could come live with them and try to get her on her feet there. So she packed up everything she owned in the car. She told the kids they were going to California for Christmas, but not that they were going to live there. I gave her my gloves, a little hug, and said a quick prayer with her for safety on the road. As I was walking over to my car, she said, "So, are you like an angel or something?" This definitely made me cry. I said, "Sweetie, at this time of year, angels are really busy, so sometimes God just uses regular people." It was so incredible to be part of someone else's miracle. And of course, you guessed it, when I got in my car, it started right away, got me home with no problem. I'll put it in the shop tomorrow to check, but I suspect the mechanic won't find anything wrong. Sometimes the angels fly close enough to you that you can hear the flutter of their wings. And maybe those wings belong to Clarence. Always a touching story, and I always have a tough time getting through it without getting a little misty. Play a little music from Tony Bennett and have yourself a Merry Little Christmas. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Christmas future is far away. Christmas past is past. Christmas present is here today, bringing joy that will last. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on,
From Tony Bennett, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. And we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Wisdom has it that every time a Christmas bell rings, an angel gets his wings. And as one of those angels, Clarence, says to a Mr. George Bailey of Bedford Falls, "Remember, George, no man is a failure who has friends. And thanks for the wings." American Blues Theater continues its 2016-2017 season with the 15th anniversary production of the holiday favorite It's a Wonderful Life live in Chicago. The production, based on the beloved Frank Capra's film, was directed by producing artistic director Gwendolyn Whiteside with music direction by Michael Mahler. It's a Wonderful Life runs through December 31st at the Greenhouse Theater Center, 2257 North Lincoln. This story is a staple of our mission. American Blues Theater explores the American identity through the plays it produces and communities it serves, notes producing artistic director Gwen Whiteside. This story reminds us of the fragility of life. Frank Capra's line, "Each man's life touches so many others' lives. When he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he?" resonates throughout the year. During the holidays, it becomes a poignant reminder as we gather with our loved ones. For 15 years, the American Blues Ensemble has treated Chicago audiences to a live 1940s radio broadcast of holiday favorite It's a Wonderful Life. The incredible cast recreates the entire town of Bedford Falls with Foley sound effects and original score and holiday carols. The Bedford Falls residents extend their hospitality after every performance when audiences are treated to milk and cookies served by the cast. And on the line with us right now is a Jeff Award-nominated actor for his work in Sondheim's Little Night Music and Newt Rockne All-American. Brandon has been seen on the stages of Drury Lane Oakbrook, Writers Theater, and the San Francisco Playhouse. He has been seen on television in Chicago PD and is a graduate of the Second City Music Conservatory. Now starring in and making his American Blues Theater debut in the iconic role of George Bailey in the classic production of It's a Wonderful Life live in Chicago at the Greenhouse Theater Center, 2257 North Lincoln, Mr. Brandon Dahlquist. Brandon, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Oh, thanks so much, Kevin. Nice to be here.
Great to have you, and it must be fun to be in a classic.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a real honor, actually, because so many people have such reverence for this film and this story, and to get the chance to say those words and to tell a really beautiful story every night is a real blessing, a real opportunity. I'm very thankful for it.
Brandon, I can't watch it without crying.
No, I know. I like to think that I'm a pretty solid guy, but it gets me every time.
You know, interestingly enough, it was Frank Capra's favorite film. It was Jimmy Stewart's favorite film. It came from a short story written by Philip Van Doren Stern entitled The Greatest Gift, and he couldn't get it published at first, and so he sent it out as a Christmas card to his friends. And then, of course, when it caught on, the script was put together by such greats as Dorothy Parker and Dalton Trumbo and Clifford Odets, won 5 Academy Awards, and it's a life-changing experience for all of us.
Yeah, and from what I had understood, it was the first film that Jimmy Stewart did after coming back from World War II, where he was a bomber pilot. And and knowing that and having that context, watching the film again, you see the fight in his George Bailey and the the kind of real raw emotion that he had entering back into his livelihood after fighting for his country. It's pretty unique.
For those who haven't seen it, just give us a brief overview of the story.
Overview. George Bailey is he has the biggest heart in town, and he grows up in Bedford Falls and wants to leave, wants to go exploring, wants to see the world, wants to build skyscrapers. And he kind of watches as some of those opportunities and the plans that he had for his life kind of don't happen the way he thought they would. And he sees his friends leave. He sees his brother succeed. He doesn't live the life he thinks he's going to leave. And then one night something happens, and he is forced to confront his nemesis in town and ask for help. And his last straw is broken, and he has to... he has to confront some darkness, and he chooses to end his life. And at that time, a heavenly visitor, Clarence, his guardian angel, visits him and kind of shows him that he did live a wonderful life, and it would be a shame to throw it all away.
Don't we wish we all had a Clarence, Brandon?
Yeah, nice. Yeah, it's pretty funny because when George says Lois, Clarence shows up, and the kind of the incredulity that George talks to Clarence with is actually, it's darkly funny. At one point he says, yeah, you look about the kind of guardian angel I'd get. Kind of a fallen angel, aren't you? What happened to your wings? You know, dark humor there.
And to think now, you're playing this role. Now, you've aspired to be an actor. You've trained to be an actor. You've earned the right to be on the stage and so forth, and you polish what you do every day. And now you're in this iconic role that people have played. You had mentioned Jimmy Stewart and all the great people have played this before, and that's, now you're in that role. That's exciting.
Yeah, it really is, and it's not lost on me because I'm a big fan of the golden age of Hollywood, and I know the history of the story, and it's definitely something I have great pride in and great responsibility. I understand that.
And the way it's done is a radio play.
So the convention is that we are radio actors on a 1940s radio program, and we are presenting this new script, this new story that's going to be soon released as a major motion picture by Frank Capra, and we're giving the radio version of it. So we have a lot of fun with, we're holding our scripts in our hand, and we're presenting the characters just through our vocals, and it's a real challenge, and it's been a fun challenge to kind of distill all the things that you would expect in a film into just the way that you intonate your lines and the way you use your voice and the inflections that you give the line. And we have a great Foley artist, Sean Gowdy, who's, supplying all of the doorbells and the snow.
Sound effects, right.
It's so cool. And it works, as the audience members, it works visually as you're like watching, wow, this company of actors really enjoy telling the story. They're having a lovely time together. Or if you close your eyes and you listen to the story, it works that way too, because I think it's that descriptive.
And you even have some commercials during that time.
Yeah. Michael Mahler, our incredibly talented musical director, has written some jingles, and they're actually, for Blue Cross Blue Shield and, the Lincoln Park Zoo and Aquitaine Restaurant and CH Distillery, like real Chicago products, but they're done with a kind of a nod to that 1940s radio advertising. And our company is full of very, very talented singing actors, and so we get up and we sing the jingles, and it's really cool. We also do something called an audiogram, where we pass out a note card to our audience members as they enter the theater, and they're able to send a message to a loved one or a friend that they might be attending with, or just a seasonal greeting, and we collect them all from the audience, and they are at times read on the air in the kind of act breaks of It's a Wonderful Life. We do some jingles, and we connect with the audience that way, too.
And milk and cookies at the end.
Milk and cookies at the end. Can you get any better?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
The thing about it, it's such a refreshing, we live in kind of a cynical world at times, and things can be, unnecessarily dire. And it's really just, it's 2 hours of irony-free, authentic, positive holiday cheer. I can't say it any better than that, because it's really what it is.
It's 70 years old. It's been many, many years since we've enjoyed this. What is the timelessness? Why is it timeless, Brandon?
I think it's timeless because, everybody goes through those dark moments of, you know, is it worth it? Is what I'm doing even noticed by anybody? Would anybody notice if I wasn't here? Have I done what I thought I was going to do? We all struggle with that, you know, from the beginning of time, I think. And I think that's one of those universals that never goes away. And I think that oftentimes that's magnified at the holidays when you're kind of reassessing your year and saying, what did I accomplish this year? What went well? What didn't? Am I living my fullest life? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And I think that's a question that we will always ponder. And I think that's why it's so timeless. And to be reminded of the fact that no matter how small the connection is with, you know, a loved one or a friend or a family member, it is worth it. And to be reminded of that is just always a lesson or a message that's always welcome.
And at the end, without giving anything away, of course, I'm sure everybody's probably seen this, is that people appreciate George Bailey for who he is and what he's done. And I think they show that. I heard a good quote the other day by Cicero. It says, gratitude is not only the greatest of the virtues, but it is also the parent of all the others. And at the end of that, we certainly see that, don't we, that people do show their gratitude for the type of person that George Bailey is. And, you know, those little random acts of kindness, and I'll mention this in our closing, is this time of year gives us a reason to do it for no other reason than it's Christmas.
Yep, exactly. It's one of those, you never know what's going to make someone else's day or what's going to affect someone in that way. And that's what's so moving to me at the end of the play is that, you know, George just was a good guy throughout his life. And, you know, sure, he'd give people money if they needed it. He'd help them build a fence. You know, that's just what he did. That's the kind of guy he was.
Sure.
And now there's no monetary value to that, but it comes back when he needs it. And that's what's so emotional about it. Like you said, it's these little random acts that can add up to be very profound.
As is said in the classic, It's a Wonderful Life, you see, George, each man's life touches many other lives. And when he's not around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he? It's been said this play is like an American version of Dickens' A Christmas Carol, but there are some differences between the two, apart from time and place. In A Christmas Carol, Scrooge is given a chance to change the way he lives his life. In A Wonderful Life, the hero, George Bailey, is given the chance to change the way he looks at his life, an adjustment in the way he sees his place in the world. He doesn't need to change the way he acts, just the way he looks at life. George, you've had a wonderful life. At this time of year, when many of us are taking stock of our lives, looking back on the past year, as you said, Brandon, making wishes for the present and getting ready to make resolutions for the future, we're always drawn to this story. George wasn't a Superman-type hero. It was like many of us, a human being trying to live life the best way he knows how. And maybe this little story should serve as a gentle reminder to all of us that we are all capable of making small decisions every day and practicing those awesome random acts of kindness that touch many other lives and ultimately, in our small actions, change the world in big ways. American Blues Theater continues its 2016-17 season with the 15th anniversary production of the holiday favorite It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago. The production, based on the beloved Frank Capra's film, is directed by producing artistic director Gwen Whiteside with music direction by Michael Mahler. It's a Wonderful Life runs through December 31st at the Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln. And for information, 773-404-7336. On the line with us right now is Brandon Dahlquist, who's playing the iconic role of George Bailey. Brandon, a pleasure chatting with you, and continue to have fun with this and bring joy to all of us throughout the Christmas season, because I'm sure people who come, they leave feeling a little differently than when they came in.
Absolutely, and they share with us as they walk out just how much it means to them, and that's the added bonus for getting to do this job that I get to do.
If not for your great performance, maybe at least for the milk and cookies, right?
Exactly. I guarantee something will be good.
Brandon, thanks for taking a little time.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Brandon Dahlquist, who stars as George Bailey in the American Blues Theater production, the 15th anniversary. It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago, based on the film by Frank Capra, directed by Gwen Whiteside, music direction by Michael Mahler. It's something you want to see on stage. It's something you want to see on TV. It's something you like to revisit every Christmas time. And I dare you to get through without crying, because I certainly do. For information, 773-404-7336. Well, of course, we have the Magi, and who are the three wise men. But we also should have thought about having the three wise women, because they would have asked for directions, arrived on time, helped deliver the baby, cleaned the stable, made a casserole, brought practical gifts, and then, God help us all, there would be peace on earth. Let's enjoy, again, Frank Sinatra, I'll Be Home for Christmas. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas if only find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas if
Frank Sinatra, I'll Be Home for Christmas. That was from my dad. That was one of his favorites. And we're back on the Kevin Moore. Swirls is Chicago's original cupcake shop, established in 2006, located in historic Lincoln Park and down the street from DePaul University. Swirls began by creating fresh batters, buttercreams, fillings, and garnishes daily in true artisanal style using all fresh and many local ingredients. This quality and integrity has never been compromised. Swirls classic buttermilk cakes are made using Grassland Farms European-style butter in both their cakes and light-whipped Italian buttercreams. As of their 10th anniversary in September of 2016, Swirls has created more than 1,500 unique flavors. They carry cupcakes, mini custom cake items, gorgeous and delicious cakes, brownies, a full line of gluten-free cupcakes offered daily, and a line of 18 vegan gluten-free cupcake flavors that may be found at 27 Illinois Whole Foods Market stores, as well as from Swirls. Large catered events and do-it-yourself weddings are their specialty. Swirls cupcakes have received national accolades for the number one best of cupcakes. The store is cozy and a friendly staff is always there to make people happy. But Swirls can deliver all over the Illinois in the world. They're worth delivering around the world. And on the line with us right now is the businesswoman, entrepreneur, marketing expert, creative genius, indefatigable promoter, leader in the ever-growing and newest hot culinary treat, the cupcake, a woman always there with a helping hand for others, and the founder of Chicago's favorite cupcake destination, Swirl's Cupcakes, located at 705 West Belden in the heart of Lincoln Park, now celebrating Christmas, New Year's, and all the holidays, our good pal, Pam Rose. Pam, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Thanks, you know, I don't even want to say what cupcakes are for Christmas here, because both myself and my studio producer, Josh, chocolate peppermint cheesecake.
Yep.
Gingerbread, complete with a tiny gumdrop-holding candy gingerbread man. Holiday red velvet. Winter wonderland vanilla, topped with a mini pie crust snowflake dipped in white chocolate and winter hot chocolate, topped with a shortbread Scotty dog wearing a red and white scarf. Unbelievable. I'm dying here. I really am.
I know. Did we knock ourselves out this year?
Oh, good Lord. Chocolate silk pie, bananas Foster. Now, this is mine. Amaretto cheesecake with Amaretto di Serrano. Now, not normal amaretto, Amaretto di Serrano, the Italian, the real amaretto.
Exactly. Right from the amaretto people. They bring it right to us.
I'm done. Goodbye.
We know how you feel. We just
Man, I'll tell you what.
Amaretto coffees in the store.
And people think that I'm kidding when I say this is the best cup. I got to tell you, now we were down to see Sean and his family who lives in Dallas the other day.
Okay.
And I was able to have my grandson down there, Henry, and he and I went out for ribs. And there is a Sprinkles in one of the, and it's from California, isn't it? Sprinkles from California?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I said, come on, Henry, I'll get you a cupcake. So I gave him a cupcake and I said, Henry, these are not as good as Swirls in Chicago, I can tell you that. He said, Grandpa, are you going to take me to Swirls? I said, absolutely. I'm taking
absolutely.
The Swirls. Absolutely.
Anytime.
A great season for you, always a great season throughout the year, and certainly something you really get geared up for, but all these great offerings for the holiday is terrific, you know.
Yeah, we have such a great group of chefs here, Kevin, that every day they're creating new things for us and for the customers. So any day the customers walk in, there's something new. It's really fun for our customers.
Which shows how engaged they are too, Pam. You know, you can hire a chef and a cook and so forth and a baker and so forth. But if they're coming up with these ideas, that means they're really enjoying what they're doing. They're enjoying so much taking care of your customers and they want to create new things too.
They do. And I'll tell you the funniest story. It's the cutest thing. At least once a week, there are little love notes that someone leaves for our chefs. I'm not kidding. Either a kid who comes in the store for the first time or a student from DePaul or one of our really great customers, they leave a little note. Just wanted to tell you, these really, really are the best I've ever had. So it's adorable. I mean, we get love notes from customers that go right to the chef.
Instant gratification. What's better than that? It's like applause. They can't get applause, so they send them a note. That's terrific.
Isn't that darling? We just love it.
You love this. You've been doing this for so long, and I'm so very happy that you've achieved and reached the success that you have, and it's continuing to grow. And people more and more throughout the area, of course, are learning about Swirls. And that's because, and I've always said this before, I'm going to bearish a little bit, because of everything you do for other people, for philanthropic causes. You know, there's an old saying, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. Nobody personifies that more than Pam Rose and what she does for other people that ask for help.
Well, thank you. We really like to be part of the community, Kevin. And we've had that mission since the day we opened, and we've never compromised that as well. And from the tiniest little school who asks us, you know, for a gift card for an auction to, you know, doing the WTTW gala for every one of their guests. You know, so there's a lot of different things that we do to participate in the community.
Well, you talk about community. At one time, your community was the Lincoln Park area, that area right around Bellman. Not anymore. No, your community is now Chicagoland and the suburbs and the state of Illinois and all the Whole Foods markets in Illinois. That's terrific.
Yeah. It's expanding all the time. Matter of fact, on Saturday, we're doing the big Special Olympics of Northern Illinois. They have their gala. So that's on Saturday. So that's this week. But the borders, the boundaries are ever expanding for us.
So,
so that's a good thing, right?
So is Shannon's family, because they all like cupcakes, I got to tell you.
Good.
Now, what if somebody's going to come into Swirls for the first time? What would they? How would you introduce it? What would they start with first, Pim?
The first thing when people walk in this world, they always say it's very cozy because it's not a big space.
No,
I mean, you know that it's not a big space.
Right.
But we can fit a lot of people in here because everyone is always generous with their personal space. We always say that. We've had more than 60 people at a time be in Swirl's Cupcakes for a tour, and nobody seems annoyed or overcrowded. Everybody's just happy. The smells are great. The staff is great. The cake looks magnificent at all times. It's just beautiful. I mean, the chefs do such a great job. And we craft everything so that the colors are always beautiful seasonally, and there's always new things to taste, and we have samples for people. So I think it's just always engaging the customer, making them feel the minute they walk in the door, you're important to us. That's the first thing that I think people get when they come here.
You know, and it's so very important because if that staff isn't that welcoming, that's what you're going to find out about.
Exactly. And I go a lot of places where the staff is not welcoming.
Right.
They're just not nice.
Right. They don't get it.
And,
right.
You know, you look at people and everybody's lives, everybody's challenges in their lives. You do not want to come in a cupcake store or a bakery or somewhere to buy cake and have somebody with a face that is not going to make you happy the minute you walk in.
Right.
You want to be
made
happy.
Right. Right.
That's
right.
That's what we do.
So you suggest that the first one is a devil's food cake with chocolate frosting with vanilla frosting with vanilla in the inside, which is my favorite, of course.
Ah, yes.
And red velvet's very popular. Now, that's always very popular. Holiday red velvet that you put together is a little different, though.
Yeah, holiday red velvet we do a couple different ways. We'll drizzle it with ganache, or sometimes we do we have a whole group of customers who do raspberry red velvet for the holidays,
mm-hmm.
and we fill it with a raspberry truffle filling. And it's really beautiful. So, it just depends on what people like. And then with the Winter Wonderland vanilla, that's really beautiful. It's we take white chocolate vermicelli. I mean, not sprinkles or jimmies, what you would call jimmies, you know, those little elongated beads that people put on top. These are not made with sugar, just a sugar or a corn syrup. These are from Italy. They're white chocolate vermicelli. These are delicious.
Wow.
So when you dip the whole thing, the whole top of the cupcake in the white chocolate vermicelli, the mouthfeel on it is just beautiful. And then we have like a very light iridescent edible spray that goes on that, and it just sparkles. And then we make a homemade pie crust and cut out little snowflakes. Like this morning, the whole store smelled like pie crust baking because we made all little snowflakes and dipped them in white chocolate and then sugared them for the top. Just beautiful.
Jeez, beautiful. And you make cakes now, too.
Yeah, we've made cakes for several years, but we pretty much make we do a lot of gluten-free and vegan gluten-free weddings. That's why I say in our discussion all the time, the DIY wedding people always, you know, do-it-yourselfers come here a lot because you can buy several small cakes. You can do a real variety of things. And people don't even realize that it's gluten-free, so therefore you could buy a cake for a wedding or cupcakes for a wedding. And people don't even know that it's a dietary restricted product, and you don't have to worry about any cross contamination because everything is made that's gluten free. So it's really nice for people who are doing a wedding and don't want to have to think about, you know, the fact that, oh, they have to keep this separate or we don't want someone to get sick. So you just do the whole thing gluten free or the whole thing vegan gluten free. And we have tremendous response to those types of weddings with customers.
And now you deliver in the area?
Oh, yeah, we deliver everywhere. We have drivers that we use Uber Rush for driving.
Oh,
Uber.
Great.
We have our own driver. Amazon Prime, we launched with Amazon in September.
And
if you go on Prime Restaurants, they even have a $10, if you're a Prime customer, $10 off your first order. So you could get a box of six for $11, which is ridiculous, and they pay for the delivery.
The secret is here. Here's the secret. Here's the secret. People don't want to eat a large cupcake. You're better off getting six small ones and eating those, and you don't feel as bad.
We sell a lot of mini cupcakes, and the minis are fantastic.
Oh, they're terrific.
You know, they're just as beautiful, just as moist, delicious. Everything's baked fresh every day, so no one has to worry that, oh, if it's a smaller one, it's not going to be as fresh. They're baked that same day.
You know,
before you called, I was just putting in the car an order for 600 pieces that were going out the door. You know, that's just for a company luncheon, so.
Well, the Moores are going to be down there to get some Christmas cupcakes and always enjoy it.
We can't wait.
And I thank you for everything you do. Swirls Cupcakes is a fresh, fun, and stylish bakery store located in the Lincoln Park area of Chicago. It's on Belden, just off Lincoln, 705 West Belden, south of Fullerton. You'll recognize Swirls Cupcakes Bakery Store by the wonderful aroma of dozens of fresh-baked cupcakes wafting in the air and the happy frosting-lipped eaters inside. Cupcakes make people happy. 705 West Belden for information, 773-404-CAKE, which is 2253. On the line with us right now is our good pal, Pam Rose. Pam, always a pleasure, and anytime we can get the word out, and you know we do about Swirls Cupcakes, we will continue. Go to Whole Foods. They're going to be loaded there. They'll be sold out, so get them early and often, or go down to the Lincoln Park location and enjoy yourself for the holidays.
Have them delivered.
Have them delivered. Amazon. There you go. Perfect.
There you go.
Perfect. Okay, kiddo. Happy holidays. We think the world of you. Thank you for everything, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much, and happy holidays to you guys as well. Bye-bye.
Thank Pam. You. Pam Rose, the founder of Swirls Cupcakes, the best cupcakes in Chicago. Again, 705 West Belden, or call Amazon, or give them a call at 773-404-CAKE. Ask for Pam specially, because she's just a very, very special lady. Just a few final thoughts before we close in honor of the Christmas season. This holiday season, a time of loving, a time of giving. The first gift, that of his only son, was the beginning of the tradition of love known today as Christmas. And so, during this season when traditions are followed and love is in the hearts of all, I want to share these humble gifts with you. I wish you the gift of kindness. Kindness in your words so as to create self-confidence within your spirit and soul. Kindness in your thinking so as to create a profound new attitude by which to live each new day. And kindness in your giving so as to enhance the abundant love you give throughout the year. I wish you the gift of magic. Magic to fill each candle, star, and light on your tree with a special feeling of love that only Christmas brings. And magic to last all year long and remind you of your many blessings. It would be a wonderful tradition to keep that magical kindness of Christmas in our hearts each day throughout the year. And so, the tradition of gift-giving reaches far beyond just the joy of buying and receiving. It is my hope that your Christmas spirit and love will be recognized in the sparkle of your eye and the grin on your face throughout this entire season as you remember that first gift, his only son. May the peace and joy of the season be yours today, and the Christmas tradition of love be yours to share throughout the coming year. So for me and my family, I thank you for the time we spent with this past year on the air, and God bless you and those you love. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, Ashley Weider, the artistic director of the Joffrey Ballet, now presenting the world premiere of Christopher Wheeldon's reimagined version of Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress at Michigan, December 10th through the 30th. For information, 312-386-8905. Don't miss it. Brandon Dahlquist, who is now playing the iconic role of George Bailey in the classic production of It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago, their 15th anniversary at the Greenhouse Theater Center, 2257 North Lincoln. For information, 773-404-7336. We thank Kathy Taylor for arranging things. And Pam Rose, the owner of Swirls, the best cupcakes in Chicago, 705 West Belden in the heart of Lincoln Park, now celebrating Christmas and New Year's. Please stop by, 773-404-CAKE, which is 2253. Always fun, enjoyable chat with Pam. Finally, a famous writer once said, "One ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words." I hope on our show today we have at the very least done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Merry Christmas, everyone.
The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes, I may not see forever. Forever. Be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music The music.